Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Beyond Rent. In today's episode, we have Ethan from Latchell joining us once again. This is his third time on Beyond Rent, and I'm really excited to dive into a new topic with him: owner retention and operational efficiency. We'll explore these two items from the perspective of software, using technology, and even AI to help us with those items. Ethan, welcome to Beyond Rent.
Thanks, Joe. I love coming on the podcast. It's great to be here for a third time.
Yeah, I think you are our first third-time guest as well, so that's a special honor that you get to hold.
Right on. We'll see how long I can keep that going. Maybe I have to like start planning the fourth visit with you.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, let's plan ahead on that one. That's for sure. So, well, I appreciate you coming back. Obviously, we value your time and all the insights that you always give us on the podcast, so we're happy to have you here again for this topic. But before we jump in, for anyone that hasn't watched those prior episodes, go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell them who you are and what you do over there at Latchell.
Sure. I'm Ethan Lieber. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Latchell. And if you don't know what Latchell is, we're a maintenance software platform, help folks handle inspections, turns, repairs, but we design the platform to be super focused on retaining residents and retaining your units.
Excellent. Thanks for that quick overview there. And you know, as far as Latchell is concerned, how long have you been around and what would you say would be maybe your target audience? And I think this ties in a little bit of what we were just talking about, maybe where you started and where you're headed and kind of how the company is growing.
Yeah, so we actually launched our first product in early 2017. And that product was fully focused on helping property managers create a great resident experience around emergency maintenance. And at the time, this was pre-generative AI back in 2017. So it was very much using combinations of traditional software workflow technologies plus human call center technologies to make this happen, where residents could call in, they could text in, you know, we had a portal, they could create their maintenance request, and we have that human team reviewing to know, okay, is this an emergency? And then doing some extra troubleshooting, usually via video. That was back then, and you know, all kinds of things can go wrong when you're very dependent on people to do things. And a lot of it became, well, how do you use technology to create consistency, great fast experiences? And as AI has evolved over the last 2 years, there's some really cool stuff we're now doing with generative AI, and it can really transform the outcomes property managers get. So don't be sleeping on generative AI.
Well, I know a lot of people are talking about it. Hopefully they're not sleeping on it as people figure out exactly how to use it. I think you're one of those people that are really honing in on some of those specific areas that really make a lot of sense. So that's great. Well, let's not uncover too much, right, about all of that, because I know that's part of what we want to talk about, and we'll get to the whole AI piece. But let's just jump right in. We're talking owner retention. We're talking about efficiency in your operations and how it all ties together. You've already mentioned retaining residents, and we know that by retaining residents, we can retain owners, but I think it goes a lot deeper than that. So when you think about owner retention, again, not everyone's third-party management, but we all need to view the owner sometimes as a customer, even if they're internal, right? When we think about owner satisfaction, owner retention, and how you view that model, what are some of the most important aspects that come to mind?
Yeah, well, I think that the thing that most property managers will feel in their bones, they'll feel it in their gut, but we've rarely made this explicit, is that there is a direct correlation between resident churn and unit and owner churn. And we can break it up into two categories. There's the issue of if you're a third-party manager, you're losing an owner as a client, right? We'll call that one owner churn. And that owner might have a few units with you. Maybe they have a few buildings with you. Maybe you're managing institutional, and that ownership group, it represents 30% of your business. That owner churn is going to be the worst kind, because it's not, you're not just losing a unit. You're probably using multiple units. You're also losing the entity that could represent some natural growth for you if they go and buy another building, another few homes or something like that. So later we can talk about how all of this operational stuff that a management company has to do can put that owner churn at risk. The second category is the unit churn. And this is where I think things can be really surprising for management companies. Especially if you're a third-party management company. Even if you don't lose an owner as a client, that owner might sell a building. They might sell a couple of their homes. And so even if that client's continuing to maintain a contract with you, there's going to be a huge growth, a pressure against your company's growth when they sell units, right? And if you talk to most property managers, you're like, oh, why do you lose units? Well, the owner sold. But we often pretend like we actually don't have control of this. We don't have control. They sold the unit. Nothing I can do. That perspective is wrong. And what we're learning about retention is that that unit churn is directly correlated to the resident experience, meaning the better your resident experience, the less often your owners will sell their homes, the less often they will sell their investments. And like, I think we all probably can understand that and feel it. Like something in your gut is going to tell you, yeah, that's true. But we've never actually embedded that knowledge into how we run our management businesses. That resident experience is actually about ensuring your clients aren't selling their investment properties every year. And I'll give you just the one metric to look at in your portfolio for anyone listening to know this is true. Go look at when your owners sold units, like when you lost units due to sales, that churn. And go look at whether or not the unit was occupied when that unit was sold. Majority of them were vacant because the resident churned. And if you can keep the resident in the home, you can keep the unit on your books, you can keep your clients happy. That's how these two things relate.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I do agree. I think a lot of people feel that in their gut. I think maybe they are not looking at the data in a way that helps them understand it, but it truly does make sense. That if the resident leaves, or if occupancy is low in a multifamily setting, that is when that owner may start looking at other options, right? Because if it's a good investment, the owner will keep it, right? That's who they are, right? They're investing. That's the name of the game for them, right? If they have high occupancy, if they have revenue coming in, that's a good investment for them, and they'll keep it. They're only going to move on to new investments when they feel like the one that they have isn't working well for them. But like you said earlier, a lot of people tend to think that that's out of their control, right? Oh, they sold the property. It was, you know, real estate values increased in that area, so they sold it. Well, they probably didn't even look at the value until the occupancy was an issue, right?
And it's a moment, yeah, as soon as occupancy becomes an issue, especially when you're talking like a single family home, right? You either have 100% occupancy rate in your single family or 0%, right? It's very like polar. So whenever you have that occupancy problem, whether or not that owner is going to sell, you should put your bet that they're at least going to consider it, because it's more challenging to sell units that are occupied when you have that cash flow coming in. And it's not about, oh, like, do I spend all this money filling the vacancy, or is now a time where I sell, you know, recoup my investment. you're going to consider it.
And I would have to think, you know, we talk about single family versus multifamily. Multifamily is a little more dynamic. There's a lot more going on with occupancy, the number of units, things like that. Single family, this probably impacts those, what we call like the accidental landlord type situation, even more so, right? Mm-hmm. They have a property. They didn't really intend to be an investor, a property owner. They have somebody managing it for them. The second it goes vacant, like you said, they start evaluating the cost, the effort to refill it. And they're like, this isn't really something I was interested in to begin with. So maybe it's time to move on and take whatever appreciation they've gotten out of the property.
100%. This is going to be like the thing for the accidental landlord that, you know, raises their attention. But, you know, the bigger you become as an investor, you may truly, as a third party manager, be abdicating some direct control of that. The larger your client is, like if you're managing on behalf of like a Starwood or like, you know, a BlackRock portfolio, the way they're making those decisions across the hundreds of properties they own is going to be different. But most of us aren't betting our entire business on a single institutional relationship. And if you are, you end up like having problems like we had in, you know, 2022, where these big institutional landlords had to make big sweeping changes to their portfolio makeup. And if you were a third party manager managing any of those, your business was probably eviscerated because you had, you know, 80% of your whole portfolio is with one client who decided, we're going to sell, you know, 2,000 properties this quarter. So yeah, you're spot on. If you're managing for smaller landlords, it's critical.
So unit churn, owner churn are all tied back to that resident retention. So talk to me about resident retention then. You kind of alluded earlier that through the years of you, as you've developed your company and kind of built things up, you're seeing things differently now than you saw 7, 8 years ago. You're using new tools. So how are you viewing resident retention today?
Yeah, let me get ahead of an objection I hear from a lot of property managers, whether you own and operate or you're a third party operator. I want to get ahead of an objection I hear a lot about resident retention from them. There's a running belief that we don't have as much control of resident retention as we'd like, because the reason residents move are from major life events. Major life events do happen. Over 60% of resident attrition, the resident churn, is actually due to variables you can control as the property manager. So let's talk about the ones you can control. Because, yeah, no point in talking about, like, how do we figure out how to prevent residents from getting jobs out of state? Like, let's not talk about that, because, you know, there's not much we can do there. The major reason residents attrit that you actually have control over is the service experience. And there's two categories we can break down service experience in. Most of the retention is poor service while they're living in the unit, and that's largely due to maintenance. Now, sometimes it could be due to other things like disputes you have around, like maybe failed payments, lack of payments, things like that. If you're a multifamily manager, it might not just be about the unit maintenance. It might be about, you know, the common room maintenance, amenity, availability. There might be things like that. Most of it, though, comes down to the actual maintenance and repairs that the resident needs that either aren't happening fast enough, or it's being done in a way where they don't feel like you really care about them. The other big category is like leasing experience problems. We tend to downplay the importance of like that move-in experience, but a really poor move-in experience is almost guaranteed to set you up to attrit that resident within a year.
You know, that is something I've heard quite a bit about. And obviously we want to focus on the service side, but I have heard about that move-in experience being so important that if that goes poorly, you can almost guarantee they will not renew, right? That first term is the only term they'll be there. They may not even realize it at the time, but they've already made that decision on their side. It's subconscious that it was not a great experience. So when they get that lease renewal, instantly they're going to be like, well, it's been okay here, but let's see what else is available. So that's definitely within control. But I know, like you talked about the service side, and there's so much that can be handled there. One of the things you just mentioned was doing it in a way that makes them feel like you don't care. So you fix the issue, but they really don't feel like you cared about the experience. What does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah, you know, I think we talked about this probably in like one of the past episodes. So for any listeners that want like a deep dive on this like life cycle of maintenance and how that represents to the resident, you can, I'm sure someone on your team will link that the last podcast there if you want a deep dive on it. But at a high level, to kind of recap the main points from that podcast, we tend to think about the experience being all about how fast did you actually get the repair done? And it completely misses the point, because when you actually crunch the data, how long it took to get the repair finished is completely uncorrelated to how the resident will rate their experience and how much they felt like you cared about them. To understand how the resident perceives that level of care, you actually need to break down your maintenance life cycle into substages. And when you look at the substages, these are actually where you create a great experience for the resident. So the first substage we could look at is like, what was that process like of actually receiving and creating that request? And that's going to determine a lot about how the resident feels. I mean, take two extremes. On one extreme, maybe the way you intake maintenance is the resident just goes and pops in like whatever they want into like an open form, you know, in their portal. They hit submit and they sit there waiting for who knows how long. That's like one extreme. And maybe all they wrote was like, my toilet's broken. We're like, okay, we don't even know what that means. And then they don't hear back for a couple days. That's one extreme. The other extreme, which creates 5-star experiences for the resident, is as they're creating the work order, you're actually doing the work to try and fix it with them. And that way they're not sitting around waiting to be told, flip a breaker, or, oh, it just hit the reset button, or, oh, it wasn't plugged in. You know, the silliest reason for something not working. You do that, and then the other extreme is, now imagine that within 15 minutes of having created that work order, they're being told when the technician's going to visit. Even if the technician's visiting in a week, that experience is so good, you'll get 5-star reviews. So you gotta break it down into these sub-stages and understand like how are we treating the relationship at each sub-stage.
That makes a lot of sense. And thanks for breaking that down. You're absolutely right. We can link the past episodes that you've had with us in the show notes so people can go for those deep dive side of things. But I think that's so important that people understand that even if they're offering some like online submission for service issues, it doesn't mean it's a good experience, right? Because the expectation of what a good experience is has shifted. I think there's more expectations than ever as far as that back and forth, that communication piece as people go through the process. So talk us through that a little bit, because I know one of the things we want to talk about is how we can use software and even AI to help retain residents. Is it about that experience, or is it much bigger than that as well?
Well, I think it's a lot bigger than just how do we use like technology or AI to do better. And don't get me wrong, like you should be using AI and technology to do better. But you kind of need to first reframe how you're looking at your resident experience and your resident satisfaction to take a more holistic viewpoint. You have, look at it as all these things are not dictating what to do for the resident, whether it's AI, software. Instead, really think of these as you have a diverse set of tools you can use. to deliver the right types of experiences at the right time. And certain tools will not be the right tool for different times in the funnel. You know, in the same way, you're not going to use a screwdriver to push a nail through the wall. You need to use the hammer. You don't want to use a hammer to push a screw through the wall. Like, you're just going to be doing like lots of damage to the wall if you do that. So there are certain types of things where you want to leverage workflow technology and generative AI. There are certain types of things where actually what you want is technology to tell you, the human, there's a problem. So you, the human, can get involved. People, well, you know, AI companies will pretend like, oh, our AI is indistinguishable from a real person. I promise you, your customers, your residents are going to know the difference between an AI doing something and your team, your human team doing something. And so you need to understand, like, at which parts of the chain to use each type.
And maybe to dive deeper into that, are there certain areas where you're seeing, I guess, the most gain from using AI in certain parts? Or maybe kind of flip that question around. Are there certain areas where people are trying to force AI into the situation and it's failing, and you see it failing, and it's kind of one of those situations of, well, AI can do anything, but we're just not quite there yet?
Yeah, this is an awesome question. It's very multi-layered. It's a pretty loaded question, actually. So that's like, we'll try peeling it back together here, piece by piece. So the number one place to look at leveraging AI, or even more old school workflow technology, is when speed is one of the most important factors. And that's because AI is going to be much faster than you having to get a human involved. So, like, okay, when is speed important? How about when the resident is trying to create the work order? Speed's critical. And one of the, in multifamily, I've seen this in like single family scattered site, but I see it way more often in multifamily, and it's where multifamily is actually behind the curve. So many large communities still run a process where in an emergency or after hour situation, the resident calls, gets a voicemail, leaves a voicemail, sits and waits. They wait for the technician to get an alert that there's a voicemail. Technician or whoever's on call listens to the voicemail. You don't know how long it's taken them to get there. And actually, most multifamily communities don't even have the analytics or visibility to know how long it's taking the technicians to listen to that voicemail, let alone respond to it, whether it's showing up or calling the resident back. So this is a place where prime opportunity for injecting AI and software solutions to provide a rapid response where the outcome for the resident is they really feel like they have movement now on the creation of that request. And believe me, when a resident leaves a voicemail and just has to sit and wait, they do not feel like there's momentum there. That's like one way to think about it. How do you create speed?
No, that's a great example. And I have to think that one of the main questions somebody's going to ask is, okay, so you want us to get rid of our trusted process that we've had for years, this voicemail system that they'll admit nobody likes, right? Because you have somebody on call, they never know when they're going to get a call. If they're going to get a call, it never comes at a convenient time, then they have to react to it. It's not a good process, but they've all figured that process out. Now, you're saying use AI. Can AI understand what is an emergency and how to react to it, right? Because I think that's their main question is, sometimes you don't need to dispatch somebody because they have a leaky sink and it's not an emergency that can wait till Monday. When other times there is a waterfall coming out of their wall and they need, you know, immediate assistance before mass damage happens to the unit. Can AI step in and really know what to do there?
100%. That's what you're teeing me up really nice here to plug my own company's products. But absolutely. And that's how Latchell That's Latchell's secret sauce. It's how we've built our maintenance troubleshooting AI to not only be able to troubleshoot things and create a 23% fix rate. I mean, imagine if your AI was just fixing 23% of issues while the residents were creating them. That's incredible. But beyond that, the tooling to accurately determine what's an emergency. Let me peel back the onion a little bit on this one, or pull back the curtain, I guess would be a better analogy here for this one, because I think people, look, tech companies get this wrong. Listeners, you're probably not running a tech company, you're probably running a property management company. And so you'll have these big questions around, well, how do you know that the AI is going to get it right? And the thing a lot of companies get wrong is they don't actually prioritize the way they build their AI to eliminate false negatives. What I mean here, what's a false negative? A false negative is when you incorrectly say an issue is not an emergency. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen because you could end up with property damage or maybe a safety risk, right? So the way you actually have to design any AI product is around 0% false negatives. Now, it's okay to have a false positive. What's a false positive? It's when you think something's an emergency, but really, maybe it's not. It's okay to have some of those. So in the actual design of AI, you over-lever toward getting rid of the false negatives. It's okay if you have some false positives. That's way better than having a false negative, right? And so you need to design every part of the AI to do that. And it's why, as like a property management company, you shouldn't be doing this on your own. Because if you're just pulling like ChatGPT or Claude out of the box, there is so much work you need to do on top of those LLMs to eliminate the possibility of those false negatives. But yeah, so when you come on to Latchell, our AI does that. It determines what an emergency is. Today, we do it by the property management company classifying across a couple hundred different issues what they define as an emergency. We're actually, it probably will launch this week. It's going to launch out of beta this week at Latchell. We're now using LLMs where you can also create custom rules in natural language that will ingest into understanding if it's an emergency. So rather than just like clicking through a couple hundred different problem types, you could just write. Actually, here's the, can I give, let me give you a crazy story of what one of our prospects that, so someone that's coming into Latchell right now is setting up these rules. We were talking about safety emergencies, and this was for a single family home, and how like, if the front door, it can't lock. Typically, that we would by default, Latchell considers that an emergency. Someone can just literally walk in the middle of the night. Presents a safety risk, right? Well, this one customer of ours had this really custom rule that was like, well, if they can actually wedge the door shut and block it, then we want to hold off on treating it like an emergency. So, in my head, I'm just imagining the resident like pulling their fridge out from the kitchen. Like, it's like a zombie apocalypse. Use the fridge to like block the front door. Obviously, this is like the silliest example, but a real life example. But you can do crazy things with AI now where you could go in, you could say in your settings, if a resident's able to wedge the door shut with like large objects, then it won't be an emergency. So you can get really, really sophisticated now with that type of thing.
Yeah, well, and that's the element that I was going to ask about, and you really kind of beat me to the punch. And it goes back to those false and positive negatives scenarios, and as well as that situation as well. It all revolves around, are property managers comfortable removing the human? Because the human will ask a question like that. The human would be like, okay, we understand your front door won't lock. If you want, we can dispatch somebody, but it could be a few hours. All of a sudden, it's 3 a.m., 4 a.m. before somebody can get there to secure it. Would you rather slide your couch in front of the door for the evening, or do you want to wait for someone to be dispatched? A human may have that conversation to be comfortable with it, where AI may just not understand the context. So that is, I think, one of the things that limits people from really jumping on AI is that little bit of cloud of doubt that they have with it. It goes right back to that idea of like, will they not understand what an emergency is and create a safety issue or something else that would put them in liability, right, for the situation where they believe their human employees would be able to manage that situation safely. And the bottom line is, if anyone has that scenario and they point back and say, well, AI made a mistake, they're still going to blame the property management company, right? It was your fault for trusting AI, not my fault for it. So they'd rather, again, I think, have their staff to fall back on for liability rather than AI. But it seems like we're right at the tipping point right now.
Well, actually, I think I hear that all the time. And I actually think it's the wrong way to think about building a business. And this might sound controversial. You're using a scapegoat for why not to create better process. And the scapegoat for it is, I can just depend on smart people. But here's the problem. If you own your business and you are the master of how that business develops, no one will think like you. Take your best employee. They will not think like you 100% of the time. And you're using that person really as like the band-aid on not sticking to your guns around how you want to manage your own, your company's own liability and risk. Because that's what this says. It's liability and risk. How are you handling an emergency? What are you willing to defer to the next morning? These are processes that you have to build and you have to figure out, what do I want my business to be? And you need to then resist the urge to look at everything one by one and say, did they do this one right? Did they do this one right? Because the truth is, like, you can't run a business based off which side of the bed you woke up on that day or whether you had your coffee yet. Now, look, we can't get rid of that urge. Believe me, like, there are mornings I'll wake up and be grouchy, grumpy. Maybe I drank too much the night before. And like, I'm just nitpicking everything. I'm like, cool, that's going to happen. Don't worry too much about it. But you don't want to build a business around it. You don't want to make your strategic decisions in a way that manages like that. And the truth is, like, when you actually build your processes well, an AI or a workflow technology is going to be far more consistent. You make a really good point, though, that you also need a ramp off path, because there are going to be exceptions. There are going to be times you need to divert from a process because of extenuating circumstances. And when I say extenuating, I don't mean they have to be crazy. I mean, literally, you might have prior context that a resident's kind of on like thin ice, but you really want to retain them. You just want to make exceptions for them to retain. Like, no one's going to die here. Like, you're not going to lose a bunch of money, but you might still want to make that exception. Now, like, that's where you want your human to come in. So you asked earlier, like, when do you use people, when do you use AI? This is when you use people. And that can be through a feedback loop. It doesn't have to be in real time. It's, what do I have my people auditing to check where they need to get involved to divert from standard process? You can set that up in all kinds of ways. But that's really how you clinch like a great operation that's going to consistently deliver 5-star reviews.
And that really is the operational efficiency piece to all of this, right? And I'm glad you used that word scapegoat. I couldn't find that word, but that's definitely the word that comes in, because, you know, don't use your team as the scapegoat, right? Don't use AI as a scapegoat. Create processes. And again, technology is really good at following process because it doesn't know any better, right? It's not going to react based on emotion or situation. It's going to say, these are the rules. This is how I was told to react. And what's great is AI can take a lot of factors into play at this point. It can understand the history of a resident if you tell it to. If you can say, hey, anyone that's within 90 days of renewal, we're going to react differently to somebody that just signed the renewal. I'm not saying that's the right way to run your business, but if you want to, you could tell AI to do that, and it'll do it better than any human would do it.
I'd argue that's a fantastic way to run your business. That's exactly what you should be doing. In sales and marketing, there's this concept of personalizing your outreach. Why would we forget to personalize a customer experience for an existing customer? It's even more important knowing they're within 90 days of a renewal, they're within their first 30 days. These are your moments to cater in unique ways to them. So I think that's an amazing example.
Yeah. And with AI, you could do that consistently across the board. Now, obviously you could train and teach your team to do those things as well, but that's much more challenging. So,
it costs a little bit more money too.
Yeah, well, it would, right? It would cost a lot more money than AI would. Mm-hmm. So as we think about the operational efficiency piece and also, I guess maybe some challenges around moving this direction, Where is the industry right now? I mean, you're talking to people actively every day about moving to systems like yours. Are people flocking towards this, or are they still a little bit hesitant to kind of go all in? And if so, if they're hesitant, how do we get them over the hump, I guess, to get them to use products like this?
Yeah, you know, I think it used to be, maybe rewind 1 year, that we were all, even me, largely hesitant about AI in general, or at least generative AI, LLMs, being the right path forward. That's not really the hesitation anymore, because the technology's evolved so meaningfully. Plus, we've become more familiar with it, so we understand it more. We understand like how and when to use it, how to control it, how to rein it in, how to get rid of hallucinations. You don't really have hallucinations anymore once you've done enough like training and guardrails around it. Where I think now you're having folks mostly flocking to it, but rightly so, concerned that they're the right systems. So it's not that we're, hey, we don't know about AI. It's like, okay, we all, I think at this point, maybe not all of us yet, but for the most part, we sort of understand like, this is where the future's going. We need to be using these tools, but how do I make decisions around the right tools to use? And I think companies like Latchel and others out there have some work to do here. I think the way to improve this so we all feel confident in the tools we're choosing is how to eliminate the black box that AI often is. That, hey, cool, this sounds great. What you're telling me is great, but what's actually happening here? And AI today, for a lot of software companies, is just too much of a black box. What our roadmap is, our product roadmap at Latchel is focused on, is removing the black box from our AI interactions, meaning how do you actually unveil everything happening so that our customer, the property manager, can actually participate in modifying how that AI works. I mean, let's take maintenance intake as an example. I already kind of shared, we've removed the black box around how the AI will determine emergencies and non-emergencies, right? Where you can actually customize that in natural language. Part of that process that we just released is that AI will also tell you why it's making the decision it's making based off the rules that you set. And it's so rare to have an AI tool that's telling you why it's doing something.
It's so interesting because that is some of the pushback that I've heard with even early on, like ChatGPT. Is okay, where did it get this answer from? And even those systems are starting to reveal the resources they are using more readily than in the past, right? So you're saying the same thing. People want to know, why did it say what it said? Where did it get that information from? What rule was in place that made it say yes or no to these certain things? And you're saying that's the visibility that your team has worked on.
Yeah, and the feedback loop that's meant to drive is as it's making decisions, you can assess why, and you get to modify what the next decision will be based off what it told you. You don't have to get an engineer involved. You don't have to like ping the CEO of the company to be like, hey, I think there's a bug. No, you know exactly why it's doing what it's doing. And then you go in a natural language, tell it to do something else going forward. And I think that's where a lot of software platforms will go. And all of this ultimately is about how do you iterate your systems for creating the most five-star reviews from residents. So ultimately, all this stuff, it's not about just having AI. Yeah, maybe it's a little bit about like operational cost reductions. It's going to be a little bit about time savings. But ultimately, the biggest metric you can drive is your top-line metric. How are we leveraging our operational tools and AI to actually feed into our growth engine? How do we use it to grow our company? How do we use it to create more revenue? That's ultimately the real purpose of this stuff.
Yeah. No, that's so good, because I think once people trust, they will start using the way that you just suggested. And the whole black box mentality, it actually reminds me of how we interact with humans, right? No one can guarantee how you or I will react or how we will position or phrase anything, regardless of the training that you put a human through. AI was, and sort of kind of still is, that situation for a lot of people. But what you are saying is the future won't look like that. If it does respond in a way that you didn't like, you'll know why. And you'll be able to instantaneously retrain the AI to never do that again. That's much more efficient than a human, right? Because simply retraining humans and getting them to handle things in certain ways is sometimes, I'd say, impossible, but really, really challenging over time, right? That's why so many companies hire for maybe personality, character, things like that, more so than even skill, because they know skill is easier to train than trying to train somebody's character or how they say things or their personality, their attitude. Things like that are much more challenging. None of those things exist with AI. So that's a big advantage that you and your team will have.
Yeah, there's like a side benefit to using more generative AI in accomplishing these tasks, which is you have greater control of your brand with generative AI, where creating the brand of how it speaks to your residents, to your clients, to your service providers, this is part of your brand. And when we tie it back to growth, I think what a lot of property managers fail to act on is that their maintenance operation, it's not just an operational leg, it's part of your brand building. And the best property managers treat maintenance as a brand experience to actually create growth levers from it, to generate word of mouth client referrals, to generate five-star reviews that increase the amount of SEO that if a landlord's on ChatGPT saying, who's the best property manager in my area, that you're the one getting flooded with these reviews. So ChatGPT puts you first and says, here's the company with the best reviews in Denver, in Cincinnati, in Salt Lake City, you know, wherever you are. And so I think when you're looking at it, look at the AI tooling as the best resource for brand building and turning what traditionally has been just an operating cost, you know, maintenance, and actually a growth lever to, you know, improve your retention and improve the new units that you can capture each year.
Yeah, Ethan, that's amazing. The future is bright. I know there's so much opportunity around technology. Like I said, that brand building, that experience side, it all ties together, brings us kind of full circle back to this idea of if you can retain residents through good experiences, you retain more units, you retain more owners, you can grow your business, right? You don't have to worry as much about churn if you're able to, you know, get ahead of these things. So as we turn the corner to the end of the episode, I want to make sure you have an opportunity to share with our audience more about Latchell and how they can get a hold of you, the team, and learn more about what you're doing with AI. The evolution of your company has been so much fun to watch since 2017. You always have new ideas. You're always bringing new technology to the industry, and you're finding new ways to really help our industry grow. And so I want to make sure our audience knows how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, so we here's how to get a hold of me, and special offer here. So my co-founder just published a book on actually leveraging AI and software tooling to build brands to turn maintenance into a growth lever and actually drive higher unit growth, lower retention. A couple of our customers that are actually implementing all the tactics from this book increase are reduced. They reduced their unit churn 25%. So they were it was about like a 30%, and now they're sub 20%. So like you can actually use these tactics to get these outcomes. So you can find me on LinkedIn. If you can connect with me and DM me and ask for that book, and I'll send you a copy. Otherwise, you can go buy it on Amazon. The other thing is I have a post. Maybe I'll share the link to the post with you, Joe. And for anyone listening, if you go to that post, if you just, I forget what the word is that you have to comment, but if you just comment on that post, I will then send you the book, and I'll send it to you for free. There's no cost. If you do want to pay for it, feel free. You can go on to Amazon and buy the book there. But that's probably the best way to connect with me. Just drop me a DM on LinkedIn, and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So more value add across the board, right? It sounds like a great book that people need to pick up and learn more about. So yeah, we'll drop some links into the show notes so people can make sure they can connect in those ways. But as always, Ethan, I really appreciate your time, and I'm sure our audience will love hearing more about AI. We can't get enough of it right now, and every time I talk about it, it takes another step forward. So I love hearing more about what you and the team are doing over there.
Judged. Give it maybe 3 years, and we won't even have to think for ourselves anymore. There will be an AI to do that for us. So the pace is rapid. So things are changing.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. So, well, thanks again for joining us. And to our audience, thanks again for watching another episode. And until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.